Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Oral Presentations, episode 74, IKEA Cheat Codes, Interior Design. What's up? It's Friday. How you guys doing? Oddball pick, right? Interior. What happened to World War II, Chris? Well, if the show's about learning about things I have no idea about, this turns out interior design, I didn't even know I had this hole in my game. And when I say hole in my game, it's that's generous. I would say I'm less like a pitcher who has a wild curveball in Major League Baseball, and more like a child who's never heard about the game of baseball when it comes to interior design. I found out, like, doesn't even know the rules. Doesn't understand how to learn the rules. Like, you put me in the outfield, I'm going to put that glove on my head backwards like a horseshoe crab. And have fun. I'm gonna play around the dirt. Nobody told me anything. Coach is going to yell, quit playing with the ants, Danny. When I played Little League, there was this kid, Dan. We were young, too, but, like, that was back when coaches would yell at kids. We were, like, 6 or 7. And they would put him in the outfield, and he would just play with the ants. And the coach would scream. We were like 6. I don't know. He was like, quit playing with the ants, Danny. It's still with me. 25 years later, that's still funny to me. Watching him get yelled at. Anyway, so we're doing interior design. Because I'm moving into a different place, getting out of my parents' house. Okay, pandemic, but it's lasted long enough. We can all agree on that, right? So got a place, moved a couple of things in there, but then realized that I don't know how else to put anything else in there. Like, I could throw a bed in there, but I didn't. I'm too old to be sleeping on a mattress and lying to myself about potential. So I got to kind of make a room that looks like humans live in it now. Now, I've done that once before, but I didn't pick anything. I was like 25, and I was living with a girlfriend, and then we went to IKEA together, and then she just picked everything, you know? And then we lived in a place that was pretty cool. It was a lot of red, and then she put some animal skulls up. That was all right. And then we had a big animal rug in the middle, and I felt like I was living in a magazine. I was like, this is living here. All right. And then, you know, that didn't last forever. And then ever since then, it's been a series of different levels of, oh my God, if you were going to come over and see it, like, let's say you were a guest, different levels of, like, all right, this isn't quite a saw trap, but there might be like a speaker system hooked up, like it's a middle school, and he's gonna come over and be like, oh, like, dude, they were not great, you know? But at the time, it was like, you know, we're figuring things out. Mid-20s, we're okay. Not anymore, man. It's time to, we got a place, let's make it look nice. But so I tried to go on the internet and figure out interior design, and that's daunting. If you ever go ahead and, I don't know if you have or not, but there's a ton of different theories. There's like 5 rules, 7 rules, all these terms. And that's another thing I learned when looking into this, is that this is a totally foreign world. The whole thing is, it's like all the terminology is different. It's like, it's a totally no frame of reference for any of this stuff. So the internet was kind of overwhelming. I was like, all right, well, that's not the best. And then I thought about, I worked for this dude when I was in college. I was like 20, and he does this for a living. He's done it for a living his whole life. And he's like a really interesting dude. So I texted him, and I was like, hey, man, could I ask you some things about interior design? And he was really open to it. But the first thing he said was like, all right, that's no problem. Come on by, but stay off the internet. I was like, all right, nice, no problem. And I didn't tell him that I had already kind of ventured out and been like, yeah, it's overwhelming. I don't know what's important out there. So this is based off like a source from my real life. I just went and hung out with him, And I thought it was going to be maybe like a 40-minute conversation. And it was it lasted like 4 hours. I got there at like 1 and then drove home in tail end of rush hour. So like four and a half hours, something like that. And I walked away with 10 pages of notes, frantically chicken scratched down. Because I just let him talk. Once he got rolling, I'm not gonna interrupt. Because it's either I listen and figure it out here with this conversation, which is a lot, or I got to go back home and go on the internet. Because either way, I had to do an episode on interior design because I don't know it. And it's not a huge deal to not know how to play in your own space, but it was an opportunity to learn something. And also, in my past, I'm like, I am a hard, at least 0 for 3 in IKEA as far as ruining the day. If you go, like, with a significant other to IKEA with the idea of, like, we're going to buy this and this, or, like, we're going to look at this and this, at least 0 for 3. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but those losses are spaced out. Like, I had one when I was 25, when she was buying all the red stuff and then the animal skulls. There were, like, multiple IKEA trips in there, and there was at least one hard loss in there. Ruin the day. Ice cream cone, can't save it. Doesn't matter if we stop for treats on the way out. And then the other one was like maybe 26, and then I had one at like 28. But all of them, like, just kind of ruined the day. But it's not because I got mixed. I was thinking back on like, all right, well, if that's what I want to fix, so like hypothetically I could go to IKEA and have a nice time where like I'm not worried about ruining it. I thought about why I ruined those days. And in all of those trips, my problem is that I have nothing to add, right? Which I understand now definitely could make somebody mad, because if she's asking questions about do you like this or do you not like this, and I'm like, I don't know if I like, I don't, I like what you like. I don't know. I sleep and then I wake up. I haven't really put much thought into it, which is like an honest answer, right? That was all, but that could be misconstrued as he doesn't care about this at all. That's what's happened to me in the past. And then, at least in my experience, I haven't had the conversational tools to be able to dig out and be like, hey, what's up? I'm kind of like a kid who would put a baseball glove on his head backwards, like a horseshoe crab. Does that make sense to you? You're still mad, huh? All right. So look, we're trying to do that. These are IKEA cheat codes. Now, the dude I went and hung out with and got all this information from, I don't know how much money he thinks I have. Like, some of the advice, at least the one thing about the mattress I can definitely use. But, I mean, look, all the stuff was interesting, but a lot of this advice was out of my price range. But, assuming I'm going to be alive for a while, maybe this will come into play later in life. And either way, even if it's just facts that aren't directly applicable to IKEA, that's still better in the future. If I just have a pocket full of interior design-based facts, that's better than I don't know. I have no idea. And then looking like I don't care about the conversation. So, yeah, never had a nice place that I did myself. So we're going to try to work on it here. I can't have somebody getting up and going to the bathroom again, and then like half a pistachio nut is like stuck to their butt and it falls out as they go to the bathroom. Like, yeah, we're done living like that, okay? We can't be doing that. Let's make a nice place. So this is it. This is episode 74, IKEA cheat codes interior design. All right. Now, I tried to organize the notes the best I could with different sections of where a room would be, and categorize it. So we're going to start with overall room design, and then we're actually going to end with like some American history, which is a cool tie-in. So here we go. Overall room design. About the 5 to 7 principles of interior design list that you can find on the internet. When we started the conversation, he actually brought this up, and he was like, You don't look at any of that. Those are just basics, man. Those are complete basics, and like you can't, like, people enjoy looking at them and they can help you at the very beginning, but some people read those lists and then they become interior decorators. And it's not enough. It's like the equivalent of if you wanted to read a list on how to be a NASCAR driver, and the list was like, you need 5 things to be a NASCAR driver. You need 4 tires and a car, and you're good, dude. I don't know the rest of it, but I know that's pretty much it. So that was nice to hear that I wasn't the only one who was a little confused on what those lists mean, you know? But, and listen to this, he hit me with this out the gate, and I knew it was going to be a fun conversation after this, because he was like, if you really want to hear about it, it's preferable to base everything off the Fibonacci sequence. Okay, if you don't know what the Fibonacci sequence was and is, and I did vaguely when he first said it, but I didn't know it enough to be able to be like, oh yeah, I know what it is, and have him read my facial expression that it went in and I digested it. So the Fibonacci sequence is a mathematical equation. It's called the golden ratio. I don't know if it's an actual equation, but you've definitely seen this on, like, I don't want to say aliens documentaries, but aliens documentaries, science documentaries. If you're a big, like, NOVA person who's watching things on black holes, this has probably come up. It's a universal ratio, and the way that they always show it on documentaries is that it's like a golden square, and then it looks like the spiral of like a conch shell in the middle of it, and that represents a mathematical ratio that's everywhere in the universe, apparently. It's like the size of black holes. People say it's why like babies identify different levels of beauty in different people's faces due to the symmetry based upon the golden ratio. A lot of people apply it to classic artwork. It's like a universal equation that's like beautiful to the human eye. So he hit me with that, and then I was like, how does that apply? And then he knew the Fibonacci sequence numbers to be able to divide them, because the way it's like 60, 30, 15, 7.5, like it goes all the way down. And the way, after he came off the like, don't look at anything on the internet, but real quick, check out this Fibonacci sequence. And then he said that you're supposed to use those numbers in relation to like color, size, proportion. And I don't know if that's real or not, but man, was that weird. So I was hooked in this conversation. I was like, all right, what else you got? If you get to like teleportation, I can't wait. Please tell me there's something about like tractor beams and couches. I'm so happy I drove up here, man. So the number one thing he said was as like a maxim, and he said it like it was like it was one of the Ten Commandments. It was so serious when he said it, buy what you like and know what you're buying. Which also sounded kind of like a riddle when he said it to me, but he said it with such like base to it. Like I had to put that in my head and be like, all right, so I'm buying. Okay, hold on. Maybe we should just start with the buying part. How much money do you think I have, man? Like but it makes sense. Just buy what you like, but also know what you're buying so you don't get screwed over, you know? Also, another maxim that he said was, a navy blue suit never goes out of style. Every president can wear a blue suit. And the idea of, like, careful with trendy stuff. Timeless never goes out of style. And he said it was the same reason that you don't listen to the same music that you listened to 15 years ago. Which is great if you like, you're talking about house design or a place you're going to live for 15 years. But I was like, all right, man, well, this is a place I'm going to be at for 6 months. So maybe I do go trendy on this one. I don't really know. But classic sounds nice too. All right. So we're going to start with the floor as we dice up like the areas of a place you would live in. All right. Because he said this, you always start with the floor and work your way up because the floor sets the tone for the room. And paint color is much easier to pick after you know the floor. All right, so as far as floor options, we got wall-to-wall carpeting, large area rug, and hardwood floors. We're going to touch on each of them. All right, wall-to-wall carpeting. I like knew this phrase, but I didn't understand any. Like, yeah, it's just you have carpet, right? That's it. Wall-to-wall, it's just a fancy way to say somebody installed carpet in your house, right? So this got popular in the 1930s, and a cool thing about this is that one of the selling points that advertising dudes used to try to get people to put wall-to-wall carpeting in their houses back then in the 30s was that they sold it as like a silencer for your house, especially on the second floor. The ads were like, you know, if you can put carpeting on your second floor and then you can walk around at night and the people that are downstairs won't hear you walk around at night. It was a lie. That's not true. I also kind of have a problem with, like, well, if everybody's asleep in the house upstairs, who's downstairs? As far as house rules go, I thought that, like, if everybody's asleep downstairs or asleep upstairs and then you go downstairs, like, the onus is on you if you go downstairs to shush. Like, you don't, if you go downstairs in the middle of the night, you can't complain about people that are walking around upstairs because it's upstairs time, right? It's sleep time. What are you doing up? Why are you having coffee? Anyway, so that's wall-to-wall carpeting. If you go large area rug, American tradition is that it's one big rug. And by area rug, I'm talking about like Oriental rugs. If you go to like Boscov's or wherever you get a good one from a dealer. In America, the trend is, and it's almost specifically in America, that if you do that, you go one big rug in your room, which is different because internationally they can go like multiple little rugs, spice it up, put a piece of furniture in there. But in America, we go one big one because of the boom of wall-to-wall carpeting in the 1930s. Rug dealers had to keep up with the boom of wall-to-wall carpeting. So instead of pitching a bunch of small rugs like it was normal to do, when they would go and try to sell rugs to people who were looking to put one big rug on top of hardwood floor to make their floor, to be able to design their room and pick their paint color, learning. They had to bring one big one because it was the trend there. Nobody wanted a room that looked different from wall-to-wall carpeting. And everybody kind of bought into like the house silencer theory of like, all right, well, maybe if I just have one big rug on top of the hardwood, that's still like a pretty good silencer and I won't show up on radar when I shoot, you know? Third option, hardwood floors. When somebody puts in a hardwood floor, dude, this is like a lot of hardwood floor knowledge, and like I made detailed notes, but again, I have no frame of reference for most of this stuff. They're just not problems I've had to encounter yet in my life for a number of reasons. So I'm trying to sound like I'm not reading the bullet points, but let's just go through it, all right? So hardwood floors. When somebody puts in a hardwood floor, he said this like I already knew it, but in hardwood floor installation, you have to run the slats of the wood perpendicular to the supporting joists of the floor for structural stability. Now, when he said that, I had two different questions about that. I was like, all right, I got to take a remedial math class real quick on perpendicular. And also, I think I know what joists are. You talk about like the supports that are underneath the floor. That is what joists are. Now, they can be like wooden or steel in some buildings, but mostly pieces of wood. It's kind of like how you find a stud in the wall if you're trying to hang something. To be able to, same type of deal. Studs in your wall, also under your floor. They're called joists. When you install a hardwood floor, the way that the slats, they have to crisscross. Perpendicular means that they make an X. Parallel is side by side. So you got to Lincoln log, or make sure the dudes who are putting in your hardwood floor, make sure that they Lincoln log the way the slats go versus your joists that they're going to be sitting on top of, and that's for structural stability. At this point in time, I was kind of lost. I was like, dude, I'm definitely not going to put a whole floor in. I don't know. But I was comfortable enough to be able to ask him questions. So I went swinging a little bit and I was like, all right, well, what is, in your opinion, what is like the top level hardwood? Let's say I was, you know, Macaulay Culkin from Richie Rich, that movie when I was like 11 years old and I had all the money in the world. What kind of hardwood floor would you recommend? And like out the gate, he was like variable heart pine. Again, just another term I didn't know. So I was like, oh, cool. Yeah. That's what I'm... Hey, what is that? So, hardwood floor. A lot of people put in oak or they use different type, but like oak's kind of the standard for a hardwood floor. Like a lot of people have oak floors. But variable heart pine. And I had to look up what this means. So the variable part of variable heart pine means that instead of when you see a normal hardwood floor, and it's just slats. It kind of looks like, I'm not going to say like middle school basketball court, but that's the type, that's what the pattern looks like. Like they're all going in one direction and it kind of makes sense. Variable means that the pieces of wood of the hardwood floor fit together irregularly, hence variable. Like the example I thought of when he told me this was, if you've ever watched Ancient Aliens on, I think it's Machu Picchu, where, like, all the blocks fit together strangely. Like, it's not built like the pyramids where it looks like, all right, well, this is, like, a large sandcastle. I can see how they were thinking about this. At Machu Picchu, like, there's... The Ancient Aliens people are like, they were melting these blocks with lasers, And then they were stacking them like Tetris blocks. But that's what it looks like. It's irregular. You don't... But that's how the hardwood floor would look in like a variable heart pine. And the benefit to that is allegedly there's structural integrity that comes with it. It makes a stronger floor and it's more appealing to the eye for some people. But again, all this is subjective. But that's the variable part of variable heart pine. Now, heart pine, I looked up what type of wood that is. And when I say heart, it's not... Because I heard him wrong the first time. I'm talking about heart, like the thing that's in your chest beating right now. Heart. Heart pine. So I looked up what that meant. So that's a type of wood that's the inside, like the marrow part of a very old pine tree. And it has to be a very old pine tree because like the marrow part that constitutes heart pine, it takes 30 years to grow 1 inch of that stuff. Also, apparently, it's almost impossible to find new now. So there's a whole industry of, like, reclaiming, like, heart pine from buildings that are getting torn down or, like, people that are getting their floors redone. Or the guy was actually my source for this one. When he moved into the house he lives in now, he had oak hardwood floors, but underneath was a layer of variable heart pine. So he tore up the oak hardwood floor to get to the variable heart pine. So he could use it as his floor. That's how much some people love this stuff. So, yeah, that's the marrow of pine trees. Hard to get. Oh, I learned this about hardwood floors too. Okay, so if you have hardwood floors and then you get them refinished, like you have a crew come in, they sand them down, stain them again, seal them, the whole thing. Watch out for a thing called picture framing. This is when you get a crew to come in and refinish your hardwood floors. But they use radial sanders, which is round sanders, right? But they use round sanders for the majority of the room. And then they may use a different type of sander to be able to get into the corners. Now, the problem with this is that you use two different sanders. So you're going to have two different grain patterns, even if it looks incredible. Like, even if you go all, like, I don't even know what grit they use, but like 320... 640, I don't know, it's probably more than 320, that's like a automotive grit for working on cars. It's probably way more than that if you're going to do a hardwood floor. I'm not sure. If you're a carpenter, let me know what grit you use to redo a hardwood floor. I really don't know the numbers on that. I'd like to know. But anyway, picture framing is when they use two different grain pads, they use two different gangs of sanders to be able to get your floor down, to be able to get stained and painted. Now, the problem with that is it leaves two different patterns, so when they stain and paint it, even if it looks incredible, you're still going to have an effect where the seal and the gloss and everything, it's going to sit and reflect light differently. So when they finally finish the job, even if it looked great before they stained it and finished it up right after sanding was done, you're still going to have a different light reflection on the outside all the way around your room, and that's known as picture framing. Which is, that's not what you paid for. You know, that's going to be a hard argument to have to make them redo the whole job, but that is not what you paid for. So careful for that. If you got to do it. Again, not applicable now, maybe 30 years in the future, I got to use that. I'll be 64. Come on, have a little bit more confidence. 10 years in the future, I'll be able to use that. That's accurate. You're all right. All right, that's it for floor. So he said you move from the floor up, right? He brought up window treatments, which I had to like give him some time to talk after that because I needed context clues to know exactly what he was talking about. Because window treatments to me are like that cellophane that you like you blow dry on the windows in wintertime to be able to insulate them more so your heating bill costs less. I can't be the only person who does that. Well, you know, it's like the cellophane stuff that you melt onto the windows. And then you peel it off when it gets warm again, but it really saves you money. That's what I thought he was talking about for window treatments. He meant like curtains. But I call window treatments curtains. Just curtains is a whole category for me. That encompasses all this stuff. That's incorrect. It's supposed to be called window treatments. Also, window treatments are not just curtains. There's a number of different options. And one of those options is drapes if you're 114 years old. When he said drapes, I think he like asked me when we was talking about that. He was like, you know about drapes. Something like that. And like, I felt like there was an obligation for me to come back and say yeah, so I did. But at the time when I said yeah, I was lying to him when he said, you know about drapes. Yeah, I know about drapes. Yeah. And then I needed like 3 or 4 seconds in my head to come up with like drapes are, and then I was just like, you're talking about like the Muppet movie curtain, right? Like on the Muppet show, at the beginning of the Muppet show when they pull the curtain back, and then it's like, it's time for the Muppet show. That red curtain that pulls apart, that's like drapes, right? And I don't know if he just didn't want to correct me or that is kind of right. But he was just like, yeah, so anyway, drapes. I was like, oh my God, I lied to him. I lied to his face, be like, yeah, drapes, I know. And then hit him with the Muppet curtain. All right. But I guess he knew I probably didn't know much about drapes. And I didn't want to stop him because I felt guilty about acting like I knew about drapes. So we got a decent amount of drapes knowledge right here. Which is an odd thing to have on this podcast. When I was taking the notes from the Chicken Scratch legal pad and typing up drapes information, I had like a little bit of a crisis of conscience when I was typing it up, and I was like, okay, so I'm gonna talk about drapes on this podcast, huh? Alright, here come the drapes. But here we go, look, it's the podcast about learning, let's go with drapes, why not? So, drapes are many versions of that felt movie curtain from the beginning of the Muppet Show. I wasn't super off. Now, they can be different patterns and stuff, but that's not bad. That's not totally wrong. Did I get lucky? Yeah. Now, check this out. If you want to know how to hurt your grandma's feelings the next time that you're over there, here's how you tell if somebody has cheap drapes, dude. Are you ready to figure this out? And here's the thing. If you never use this, if you're at a job right now and you have a good working relationship with your boss, I thought about this, where like, if I was listening to a podcast and I was still working under Chip, which is my favorite boss I ever had at a body shop, and somebody came on and had drapes knowledge, it's kind of applicable for all this stuff. I would pick out like drapes facts and then just go ask him like it's not weird. Just to kind of kneel him a little bit, just to see how he's doing. I mean, I wouldn't do it if he was having a bad day, but if he was having a good day, I'd be like, hey, Chip, you know how to tell... Real quick, you know how to tell, like, you know, cheap drapes, right? You know how to do that, right? I think it would be so strange that he would make me repeat the sentence. Like, I think for a second he would assume that his brain malfunctioned and misheard what I was asking him about. He'd be like, wait a sec, wait. I'm sorry, can you say that again? I'd be like, you know, drapes, you know? I think it would be such a confusion spell. So if you want to have some fun, it's a Friday. You got a good working relationship with your boss, pick any of this stuff out, and then go ask him about it, dude. See what kind of interior design knowledge he's got. I'm sorry, or she. I didn't mean to make that just like a... But yeah, I was talking about Chip, dude. Anyway, so drapes. You want to know how the cheap ones are? The trick is, you got to scrunch them up together while the light's going through them, and take a look at what the light looks like as it passes through the drapes, right? Here's the thing. If they're good drapes, it'll be all one uniform color. And we're not talking about like blackout drapes where like you absolutely can't see them. You shouldn't see a whole lot of light coming through them, but here's how you tell good drapes is that it's all uniform as far as the color when the light shines through them when they're trying to block out the sun. Cheap drapes do not do that. When you crinkle them up, when you get that Muppet movie theater curtain in your hands in somebody's house, they're definitely going to be like, what are you doing? And, I mean, I would probably lie if you get asked about that. I wouldn't be like, I'm seeing if you have cheap drapes, you idiot. I wouldn't tell them that. I would just be like, I don't know, I'm trying to crinkle up this movie curtain. This is pretty cool. I was thinking about, you know, maybe getting some drapes. But if you crinkle up cheap drapes and then the sunlight comes through them, you'll see all different types of light. Like, it'll be all different colors of light. Same overall color, but, like, different tones of the same thing. And that's because they're cheap. Because there's not a middle layer in them. Good drapes have a specialty middle layer that makes sure that the light disperses uniformly even when they're crinkled up, which is the actual test. With only two layers, like a front and a back, you crinkle that thing up, sun's blasted through at different shades of the color, because when you crinkle it up, you'll have different depths to how much material the light has to pass through. I have no idea if I'll ever use that in my life, but I actually know how to tell if somebody has cheap drapes now, which I'm pretty psyched about. I don't know how else I would have learned that. Okay, so the option for window treatments that he said was like the best to go with, and also I could probably go with because they're not super expensive. You can get these pretty cheap. You're looking for wood blinds. The idea of like navy blue suit never goes out of style. Like they have wood blinds at the White House. And blinds are those, I mean, I don't know if you guys know what blinds are. I'm not going to define blinds. But anyway, wood blinds are like the classy traditional move and you can get them for cheap. So I'm going to go wood blinds because I looked them up and they're not crazy expensive. As opposed to like, I can't put a new hardwood floor in, man. How would I even, why would I do that? But it was cool to learn about. All right, bathroom. And this might be the most valuable thing on here. I remember he told me this when I worked for him when I was 20, and he reiterated it now because I was asking him about like, hey, you have like bathroom tips or whatever. The way you clean a bathroom, this is like, I don't know, in my head, this feels like one of the smartest things I ever learned, but it also might be a dumb guy thing that most people know. I don't know, you tell me, right? So his advice on how to clean a bathroom, if you're going to have a guest or if you just really want to, you know, do your bathroom well, is that you go in to your bathroom, the toilet seat's closed, you turn the light on, you sit on the toilet seat, and you look around. And using that point of view, that's how you judge what parts of your bathroom look disgusting. And you're doing that because that's the point of view that other people are going to have when they use that bathroom. When they go to use your bathroom, that's the exact point of view, more or less, a couple inches, depending on how tall you are. But that's where they're going to look around, and they're going to judge how gross your bathroom is. And that's how you figure out how to clean your bathroom. Again, one of the smartest things I think I ever heard as far as craftiness goes, but I don't know if I'm overvaluing it. Maybe it's, I would never think to figure that out. That you use the exact same perspective that people are going to judge your bathroom by to be able to clean your bathroom. Dude, use their own perspective against them. I don't know, or you could just clean the bathroom, but I've had trouble being like, you know, you ever clean a bathroom and like you go in there with some gusto and then like 40 minutes goes by and you're like, I'm kind of, I want to eat something. But the sit down on the toilet trick would actually help because then I would have a way to like motivate myself and be like, all right, we still got this to do. They're going to see it, man. Somebody's going to see it. If your buddy has to use this bathroom, it's going to look some kind of way, man. Not that they're going to judge you, but if you want to clean a bathroom, sit on the toilet, look around, get it done. One more toilet fact or bathroom fact. The difference between what makes a bathroom versus a master bathroom, I didn't know this. Two sinks for a master bathroom. That's the big decider. I feel like guys who are like working contracting or construction probably know that, but I don't think I was ever going to come across that. Master bathroom means two sinks. All right. Then he hit on this, and this is where I really listened up because I think I can use this stuff. Bed, because we were kind of getting to what, like, I didn't want to go back into hardwood floors. He had a whole thing on leather, and I didn't want to tell him that, like, I think I'm too poor to get any of that stuff, man, but thank you for leather. Maybe I'll put the leather information on a Patreon or something, because it was a lot of cool stuff, but it's just not applicable to me right now. I'm sorry, but as far as a bed goes, number one, and he was pretty serious about this, you need a box spring. Did he say it like he didn't have confidence in me to know that? I'm not sure. Maybe I was taking everything kind of personally. And like, you ever do that in an argument where, not an argument, but a conversation where you know you're insecure about your level of knowledge in a topic and somebody's just bringing so much knowledge in the conversation? I felt like it was kind of one-sided and I was, you kind of watch out for like, did he mean something by that? He's like, no, he didn't mean something by that. It just needs a box spring, dude. He wouldn't be taking the time to talk to you about it. I was like, all right, man, yo, I know I need a box spring, okay? Did I have a box spring at the last place I lived? No. So this is definitely just me being insecure. So yeah, Chris, buy a box spring, dude. Also, he said, you got to get a good mattress. And this is your number one priority because you spend a third of your life asleep and you'll mess your body up. Too old at this point to be sleeping on the floor on a mattress with no box spring. Need a box spring, need a good mattress. Now his advice was go quote unquote pocket spring mattress. Which I didn't know what it was, but it's a type of mattress the way it's constructed. And then I really like this because he seemed pretty adamant about it. So I went and looked it up. And pocket spring mattresses, I found them online for like $400, which I don't know if that's a good one or a bad one, but what it told me is that, like, okay, well, that's not insane. You know, that's not, that's a thing that's maybe reachable, but, like, there was one for, like, $329. It's just how the mattress is constructed. So I think I'm going to take them up on the pocket string mattress thing. I think that's a good idea, definitely. I'll walk away with one of those, I think. And then as far as mattresses go, and this is a quote, he said, don't buy a Tempur-Pedic because you can't fuck on those things. So, I mean, if you have a Tempur-Pedic right now, I'm not saying anything about you. But that, dude, he hit me with that one. It was mostly, like, pretty concise, fact-based conversation with, like, some jokes interspersed. But, dude, don't buy a Tempur-Pedic because you can't fuck on it. He meant it, man. And this is, remember how I said earlier that at this point in time in the conversation, I was kind of insecure about me not bringing anything to the table a little bit? So when he said, you know, what he said, that it may be difficult to have adult activities on a Tempur-Pedic mattress, I was like, oh, yeah, are you talking about those space mattresses with, like, the wine glass and the bowling ball commercial where you can't feel anything? And he was like, yeah, those are designed where you, those are specially designed so you can't feel when your partner gets up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, but you can't put your foot down in them. Can you imagine? And he started going. I was like, I cut him off. I was like, are you talking about quicksand? It's like quicksand, right? It was such a desperate attempt to have him ask me about quicksand, dude. Because I just did a Patreon episode on quicksand, so I know a lot about it. And at this point in the conversation, I was like, again, I'm bringing almost nothing to the table. So I felt like the conversation was loosening up a little bit. I mean, if you're going to start telling me that you can't fuck on a Tempur-Pedic mattress, I mean, I feel like we're kind of open for a couple new topics to come in here. I hit him hard with, like, it's like quicksand, right? It just got like a yeah, and we kept going. And then I quietly looked down at my notepad, and I was like, yeah, okay. But in my head, I was like, damn, I wish she asked about quicksand, dude. Come on, man. Let me say something valuable here. One last note on the bed. As far as size goes, I asked him, like, what size bed do you think is good? And he was like, well, I don't know, but, like, if you go king size, you have to go something called California king size. California king is a little bit different than a regular king size bed. A California king is longer and it's more narrow. And the reason he says go California king is because it's less likely to overpower the entire room, because a king bed is massive, dude. It's so big and it's square, but if you put a little length to it, apparently it's easier to have it not be the immediate central focus completely of your room. So I listened to his advice on king size beds, and I was like, I don't know, I was thinking like maybe double. Like in my head, like I feel like it's just me, you know? Queen feels a little big. But yeah, if I got a California king in the room I just moved into, it would look like an insane asylum where the guys just came in and like to do a padded room and they only did the floor. It would look like the job is like a sixth of the way done. Where it's like, all right, well, we still got the four walls and the ceiling, but the floor's padded, so, like, put somebody in here who can't, like, run fast into the wall, and they'll be safe, dude. It would take up my entire, I would have to, like, Macaulay Culkin jump on my bed and then jump into the bathroom. So, yeah, I'm thinking, like, double on that one, but if you are the kind of person who's living life pretty good, you know, you're killing it, honestly. If you have a king-size bed, in my opinion, maybe go California king if you're picking one, you know, see what it looks like. Less likely to overpower the room. All right. And then just to wrap it up on here, he knew a ton about American furniture, which I didn't know this, but American furniture is the first type of American art form ever invented, because it was around right after 1776. Like, there's furniture from, like, 1776 that counts as classic American furniture, and that stuff's super valuable, and I thought it was pretty cool. It was the first American art form. And I learned a lot of the design elements of early American furniture were taken from the lost city of Pompeii, right? There's a lot of, like, it almost looked ancient, like, Greek to me when I was looking through the stuff, and, like, he was showing me examples of it. It's definitely there. It's all based on the lost city of Pompeii, though, because right around the time after the American Revolution happened, like, they rediscovered and started serious excavation of the lost city of Pompeii in 1748, and then 1776, America popped off, right? And then we started making our own furniture. So what was trendy at the time that we wanted to put in the furniture, what's in the news? Lost City of Pompeii got found. So there's a lot of design elements that are reminiscent of that type of architecture and design in early American furniture, because that's when they started excavating the Lost City of Pompeii. Also, I thought the Lost City of Pompeii was in Greece, guys. So real quick, let's just run this down, because I was pretty sure that it was in Greece, and it is not. The Lost City of Pompeii is in Italy. I don't know if you knew that or not. I would have bet a decent amount of money that it was ancient Greece. Nope, that's Italy. And the timeline for the Lost City of Pompeii, because I thought all this stuff happened like way, way back in the day, like ancient Egypt time. No, 79 AD, the Italian city of Pompeii is cracked by a volcano and buried. It's gone. See ya. Then in the 16th century, somebody found like traces that there might be something there, like I don't know, a handful of skulls and like half a light post. And they were like, I don't know what the hell that shit is. All right, whatever. And then 1748, the king of Italy starts serious excavation on what's down there. That's when they find the entire, like the whole city. And they're like, holy shit, a volcano trucked all these people, huh? Wow. And that becomes popular. And then that's how it influences early American furniture. I mean, these are mostly just like a couple of other like weird things at the end here. The wings on a chair. If you have like a chair, like that you would sit in, lazy boy, whatever, or like one of those formal like 1776 looking chairs that kind of look uncomfortable, and you put them in a room with a piano that the kids aren't allowed to go into. Now, I found out that the reason that they have wings on the side, that they're not just regular chairs, like I thought they were meant to be armrests, and I guess they are functional in that way, but they're also intended to trap heat. Because back in the day when there was no electricity and it was cold so much of the time, people like to read by the window. And so when you were reading by the window, no electricity, no heat, it gets kind of chilly, but you need the natural sunlight because, again, no electricity for light either. I mean, you can read by candlelight, but a lot of people like to read by the window. So chairs were designed not only for an armrest purpose, but also to trap your body heat closer to you. As you were dressed like Ichabod Crane, it was snowing outside and you're trying to read, I mean, the Bible, I guess. I don't even know what books were around back then. There weren't a whole lot of books. I would guess you'd just be reading the Bible by a cold window with pointy shoes on and a tri-corner hat. All right, last thing. There are these big gold mirrors from early American furniture. They're all round. They're called Drondel mirrors, but if you look them up, it's spelled with like a G. It's spelled like the band Guar and then Ondel, but they're called Drondel mirrors. They're super expensive. I'm not going to use this stuff, but I think it's kind of cool, and there's a little bit of like national treasure, secret symbolism here. Yo, I almost said symbology, dude. Secret symbolism here. Right, so Drondel mirrors, big gold, and the thing that's distinctive about them is that they all have an eagle on the top of them, right? So, and this is the national treasure symbology, symbolism. So, if you see one of these mirrors and the eagle is pointing to the left, like his head is like looking to the left, and he'll have a pair of cannonball in his mouth, either two cannonballs or one cannonball in the eagle's mouth, and that represents war and manifest destiny. But if the eagle's looking to the left, that means that Drondel mirror was made after 1812. And the reason that they make all the eagles look to the left after 1812 is that that symbolized America completely turning its back on Great Britain. Because apparently the War of 1812 is way nastier than people know about. And it was such a thing that like afterwards American furniture was like, all right, all the eagles point left because we are done with them. That is enough. We're not fucking with those people anymore. We're going to show it in secret Illuminati symbolism by having our eagles look left. And that's how we'll know. Also, what's cool about that is that if you see one of those mirrors with an eagle on the top and its head's looking to the right, it was made before the War of 1812. And any eagle looking forward is just kind of like decorative, and they didn't really think to put in like symbolism about whether or not they're cool with Great Britain or not. Last thing, if you see one of those Drondel mirrors, the eagle's supposed to be all gold. The whole outside, it's a big round mirror. It's kind of like a fisheye lens, and it was designed that way because back in the day, you actually needed mirrors to be able to spread light around the room. If you've seen The Mummy, when they discover the tomb, and then I think they Rick uses a pistol to shoot one of the mirrors, then they all flip on, and then the light from the one portal from the sky is coming down, and then the whole tomb lights up. The Drondel mirrors are designed in almost like a fisheye lens to be able to do a similar thing to spread light around, because again, this is pre-electricity. But anyway, they all have a golden eagle on the top, except, right? And here you go. This is like the green St. Patrick's Day, or like that purple Beanie Baby that's kind of hard to find. Like, you can never find. I remember when I was a kid, it was like, those things were like $900. I don't know. I saw one in a case once in a Hallmark store, and I was like, oh my God, I felt like I was in Fort Knox. So if you find a Drondel mirror with it's supposed to be a golden eagle on the top, but either the wings are painted black, the head's painted black, or the entire eagle is painted black, that's super valuable, because that was only done right after the death of George Washington. They're very rare Drondel mirrors, but any sort of Drondel mirror that has an eagle that's either wings, face, or entire eagle's black was made in memorial after George Washington died. Because, I mean, I guess I didn't think about this much, but the way he explained it to me is that, like, yeah, that was like JFK, the Pope, Marilyn Monroe. It was like four different celebrities getting assassinated at the same time. Like, George Washington died, and the country was like, all right, is this over? Because we haven't, that guy's gone now. It was a huge deal in the nation. I didn't really ever think about it. So, I mean, look, that's all the stuff I got. Out of 10 pages of notes, that's my interior design knowledge. You know, there were some extras, and actually the American furniture thing could go on for days, because he knew so much about that, but it wasn't really applicable to interior design, but I may do a separate episode on that stuff. The guy's just a wealth of knowledge about a bunch of topics that I have no idea. Anyway, so guys, this has been episode 74, IKEA cheat codes. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you can use any of that in an IKEA, but next time I'm in an IKEA, if I'm in a situation where somebody asks me if I like something, at least I'll know. I'll be like, well, real quick, I was more thinking about Drondel mirrors, honestly. You know, and also, don't you dare buy us a Tempur-Pedic mattress, okay? Don't ask me why. I just hear they're not great. Guys, thanks for listening to the show. I hope you had a great work week, and I hope you have a really nice weekend. Thanks so much for listening, man. I'll talk to you guys later. All right, I'll see you.